Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
This is for you. This is for you and me, and who we see when we see each other. This is for all. This is for all the time you tried to find your sister or your brother. And you're not crazy anymore. You've been waiting at the door. And it's time to open.
And we are live. This is Randy Shannon coming at you from Miami. And today we've got to send our well wishes to Dr. Valerie Kirkgaard. She is under the weather, and we hope that she feels better and very soon. I talked to her this morning, and she sounded like she needed to go back to bed, and that is exactly what she's doing. So I know that we're waking a lot of you up there in Albuquerque and on the East Coast. It's early for you guys. It's 10:07 here on the East Coast, and it is a beautiful, gorgeous, sunny day here in Miami, and we are so glad you are with us. We have a great show today. We have a great show here today at Waking Up in America, and I want you to follow along with us. If you have people that you want to hear this show today, we are going to be talking about uncovering the fraud on Wall Street. We have a special guest here today. So make sure they get on at 1050talk.com. And as you hear the show midweek, it'll be in New York State. And we're excited. We have a group of people, a couple of shows up there that play us. And we want to welcome you. And we're so glad to have you with us. To follow us, we're on wakingupinamerica.com. You can hear the replays there. They're there after midweek. And Val would for sure want me to talk about happily200.com and her website, happily200.hghbreakthrough.com. And we just want to make sure you go check out those sites. Support Val in that. Become her customer if it's something that you're interested in. It's about reversing your aging process, and who doesn't want to do that? I got to tell you, I didn't know I was going to be running the show this morning here at Waking Up in America. And so I was up super early, got out, rode my bike, went about 20 miles in the sun. You know, I try to start every day off with positives. It's about working out and eating right, eating well, and being patient. If you're trying to get your body in shape, just you got to be patient. It's going to reward you. It will show up right. And it really doesn't matter what other people are doing. It matters what you are doing. So focus on you, focus on your health, focus on just being alive and living. And, you know, you only get one shot at this. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is life. This is life right now. So, of course, we want you to spend the next hour with us. But then after this, go out and just enjoy this weekend. Enjoy the day. If you've got snow, enjoy that. If you've got cold, enjoy that. But, you know, make sure you get out there and you start living right. So I want to bring Brad on the call. And his name is Brad Klein. He's someone that I've known for many years. He's been just an absolute rock solid person in my life. I mean, this guy's done so many things that are absolute stand up, not only, you know, in the court systems, but with his family, raising his kids. He's told me stories that floored me, that have made impact, things that I remember. I guarantee he doesn't even know that I remember some of the things that he's told me in the raising of his kids. And so he's just an incredible human being. And it's funny, I asked him if he wanted to be on the show with me today. And he said, yes, today must be his radio day because he's actually headed over to another station. He just has a voice for radio, and you're going to hear that here in a moment. His name is Brad Klein. He lives up in Orlando, Florida. He has a history in radio, and he can tell you a little bit about that, but he has also been on Wall Street. And so he and I were going to do a separate interview, and I thought, you know what, let's get this out on the AM talk show and the FM talk shows and really get the word out, because I think the story that he has to say is so important to us as the country is getting cleaned up in so many different ways. So, Brad, welcome to the call. So glad to have you here with me on Saturday morning.
Randy, it's great to be here. I appreciate the call, even though it was last minute. I know it was last minute for you, and you asked me to step in as well, and I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to talk about our subject matter today. But I echo prayers, lift up Val, and lift up a little prayer for Val to feel better and do better today. So blessings to you, Val. I'm a longtime listener to the show, Randy. I'm certainly a fan of hearing you be the co-host and Val the way she handles it. So yeah, it's a great day. I'm glad you're here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, for everybody, if you want to give just a little bit of snippet of what your background has been so that they know you are absolutely qualified to be here to talk with us today.
Well, yeah, for over 20 years, I have been in and around and involved in the world of Wall Street. I started off 20 years ago working for a financial public relations firm. Well, what does that mean? I wasn't a licensed broker yet at that time. I eventually did become a licensed stockbroker and a licensed principal, which means you could run a stockbroker's office. But a financial public relations firm, you think about it, a company needs to sell their product, a company that's publicly traded, that's listed on the stock market, but there are thousands and thousands of smaller companies, earlier stage companies, that are not followed in the financial press at all. Of course, everybody knows the big names, the Fortune 500, and of course the Dow 30. You know, companies like Intel and Apple and IBM and Walmart, they're household names. Well, fine, there's thousands of up-and-coming companies that are just kind of getting their legs under them that nobody's heard about. So they have the kind of the double duty to not only market their product or service and seek growth that way, but their stock is unknown. Many times people don't even know that they're publicly traded and that their stock is available to be purchased. So you may like a company, you may not even be aware that you can go on the stock market and buy their stock. Well, a financial public relations firm is a PR firm that their niche is to help these up-and-coming companies get known, to spread their message, kind of to spread their good news out to the financial press and out to the investment community as well. So that was my job, was to network with everybody up and down Wall Street, and I did that for a number of years. I eventually left that and went over and became a licensed stockbroker, so that's called going to the sell side, and I did that for 5 years, and then I got kind of headhunted and recruited back into the financial public relations world as well. And the company I was with at that time had a nice little research project. They wrote research on these up-and-coming companies, and I was able to help expand that effort and to expand the reach of that company. I got us to host events right there at in Times Square in New York City, where we rang the opening bell and the closing bell when we had our events there right in Times Square and at the NASDAQ market site. And, you know, kind of my claim to fame, my career high point is when I got to be on television ringing the bell, and they take your picture and they put it out over that seven-story marquee that looks right over Times Square. I think it's one of the biggest marquees in Times Square. And here's this kid who grew up in a log cabin in Alaska, but there's my mug overlooking Times Square. So that was a high watermark day for me. So yeah, that's kind of what financial public relations is.
Well, and I've seen that photo of you, and I'm sure that was an exciting moment in your life. Did you actually live up in New York when you were doing all of
no,
that?
No, I
did you do this?
Well, I'll tell you what, it felt like I lived in New York. No, I never actually had residence up there, but taking a gazillion business trips, and the people on JetBlue got to know me pretty well because I flew that route in and out. So yeah, I took lots of business trips to New York, because when you're representing these companies, these up-and-coming companies, from a financial, PR standpoint, public relations standpoint, one of the things that you have to do is go out to the actual institutional investors in New York and Boston and Baltimore and San Francisco, where the big mutual funds are and the hedge funds are, and you've got to book appointments and bring your CEO in to meet these people face to face. And so basically I would be a tour guide. I'd set up these road shows, these tour events, and we'd go from office to office up and down Wall Street and Fifth Avenue and down literally on Wall Street down in the financial district with appointments that I had set up to introduce my client, the CEO, into all these funds, and with the idea being that you make the connection. If the fund likes what the story that they hear from the CEO, well, they may go take a position in the stock, which means they go buy the stock and they become a shareholder, an owner of the company in the fund. And the more you can do that, the more interest you can generate doing that. That builds a stable shareholder base, which allows the stock to kind of go up. And, of course, everybody buys the stock hoping it will go up, except the opposite, when we'll talk about that, with a little bit of the fraud that we're going to talk about.
You're kind of hedging
today.
Right, yeah. And is it where they're hedging? You know, there's a way to buy it when it's going up, and isn't there a way to buy it when it's going down? Is that where the fraud's coming in?
Well, there's a way. You know, just kind of back to basics. You buy something at one value, and you hope that the value goes up, and then you sell it for a profit. That can be real estate, commodities, gold, anything. You know, you buy a house, you hope it appreciates, you sell it at a profit. Well, same thing with stocks, but. In the world of the stock market investment, there's a way to make money when the stock goes down. It's always buy low, sell high. People think of it in that sequence. However, you can reverse the sequence. The principle stays the same, but the sequence can reverse. In other words, you can sell it high even if you don't own it, and then if the stock goes down, you have to buy it back, and that difference is your profit. If there's a stock that's trading at $10, you think they've got bad news coming out, they didn't hit good sales this quarter or this year, you can sell that stock at $10, and maybe your prediction is true. They did have bad releases, their earnings release was bad, and people sold off the stock, put downward pressure, and the stock retreated back to maybe 8 or 7 or all the way down to 5. Maybe it lost 50% of its value. So that difference from $10 to $5 would be your profit if you sold it at 10. The term for that is called short selling, and it's perfectly legal to do that, and it's been a big part of Wall Street since the very, very early days.
Well, hold on. Let me jump in.
Yeah.
You know, Obama, he used to tell the enemy when he was going to make an attack in their country. So let's say I want to make a move in Wall Street, so I'm going to put out a certain kind of earnings report or some bad news. So you don't really want to ever tell the enemy what you're doing. Is that something that should be happening when they're saying, hey, we're going to put out this news release, you know, our earnings are going to be this or that? Kind of seems like you're letting them know ahead of time without letting them know ahead of time.
Well, now you just opened up this can of worms for me, so I'll jump right into that. You're kind of throwing me a softball right over the middle of the plate and allow me to hit it out here. The rules of Wall Street, the disclosure rules, say that a company has no choice. Every single quarter, they have to report their earnings. That part can't be avoided. So a company...
Okay.
A company's not going to do that. They're required by law, that a listed company that's publicly traded is required by law to report their earnings, good, bad, or otherwise. They may or may not elect to do what's called giving guidance. It's their own sort of in-house projections on what may happen over the next quarter or several quarters. That's called giving guidance. Many companies elect to do it. Other companies say, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to let the chips fall where they may. Where the bad part comes in is maybe word gets out to somebody in the financial press. This is what happened years ago. I'll kind of give you the kind of poster child story for this was Overstock.com. We've all seen their ads. And Overstock.com was starting to get picked on by the press. The way the fraud would work like this, it's when stocks go down, they typically go down faster than they go up. So if you want to play that game, and it's called short selling. Again, that part is legal. Nothing wrong with short selling. The illegal part is when it comes into manipulation. There's several ways the stocks manipulated. The number one way is a hedge fund maybe wants to make money when a stock goes down, so they'll deliberately fabricate negative press, bad news for the company, and they would have some willing accomplices in the financial press that would put out what would be called a hit piece, a bad news piece. Maybe it's true, maybe it's a lot of false news in there as well. So it's negative on the company. Negative news is going to cause people to sell off their shares, put downward pressure on the stock. These funds have already sold the stock that they don't own. They've sold it in a short position, and then the stock will obviously collapse and go down, and then they cover their position, which means buy the stock back. And it's manipulation. It's manipulation in the news. They've put out false news or bad news or exaggerated bad news. That's one way that a stock is manipulated in that way. It's kind of hard to prove that, but Overstock was able and successful in bringing that to light. It took them 10 years through the courts, but they eventually got Merrill Lynch or Merrill Edge and Goldman Sachs to write them $20 and $30 million checks, but it took a long time to prove that. But the point is, now that it's been proven, it's been a little more readily acceptable by the regulators, and it's become more known out there. The more common way that the manipulation happens and the fraud happens, Randy, is when somebody wants to short a stock, in other words, sell a stock that they don't own.
Okay.
Well, that stock still has to come from somewhere. So typically what they will do is they will borrow that stock from some source, and that source is typically their broker that they're dealing with. So if you want to sell short XYZ stock, it has to be borrowed somewhere so you can sell it. And the idea is when you buy it back to cover your position, then you return the borrowed shares and you keep the difference in the profit. It's not an easy concept for people to wrap their head around, and therein lies the opportunity for the fraud and the manipulation. It's required that stock is first borrowed before you sell it. You can't sell anything that you don't have. Something has to be an exchange of goods, and that stock has to be delivered. The borrowed stock has to be delivered. If you sell it, you have 3 days in which to deliver it. You sold it. The buyer expects it, right?
So, I have never heard of this concept of borrowed stock until now.
Right.
This is unbelievable.
Right, and a lot of people aren't aware of it. They just think, well, I just buy stock, it goes up, and then I'll sell it and make money when it goes up. Well, again, buy low, sell high. That concept is locked in. The fact that you can reverse the order of that, you can sell it first before you buy it. Well, if you don't own it, how can you sell it? Well, you have to borrow it. You have to borrow it from a source, which is typically, and it's your broker's job, your broker-dealer's job, to source that borrowed stock for you. The fraud comes in when the broker allows you to sell short that stock, and they do not borrow it, or what's called get a legitimate borrower. They don't locate it. It's called getting a legitimate locate. They don't locate the stock to enable you to legitimately sell it, and that's called naked short selling. It's selling short without first doing a borrow. Well,
wow.
Essentially, what that is, Randy, is when that process happens, you're in essence counterfeiting shares. You're creating shares that weren't there before because the broker is not doing the proper bookkeeping and borrowing the stock first. So, yeah, if you sold 100,000 shares, and the broker didn't do a legitimate borrow or legitimate locate for you, for you to deliver that to the seller, you've just counterfeited. You've created out of thin air 100,000 shares that didn't exist in that stock before. Well, you keep doing that, and then the stock becomes bloated. There's too much of the stock. It's just like fiat currency at that point, because the more you go, the lower the price is going to go, and that's exactly what happens. It puts downward pressure on the stock, and sometimes, in some cases, the most extreme cases, they never even buy the stock back to cover their position. And many a small company, many an up-and-coming company, has been destroyed by this practice, by unscrupulous traders out there, and the SEC kind of has, let's just say, nobody that I know feels that the SEC has done an adequate job of policing that activity. So companies have formed to help these CEOs overcome and combat that, and that's what I got involved with, and so I've become kind of a spokesperson for combating this type of fraud out there in the street. It's far more prevalent than people understand.
Wow, what a honorable thing to do, getting involved in that. Always fighting, crusading for... So, you know, here's the thing, is like that. So you guys are figuring out how to combat it. Is anybody figuring out how to change it, how to take on these corporations or these business guys that are doing this?
Well, yeah, that's a fair question. The SEC... you know, the regulator for the securities industry, for the stock market industry, the Securities Exchange Commission, they have enacted policies and rules and laws. The number one being is called Regulation SHO. So people just call it Reg SHO. They call it Reg SHO, but it's one thing to have a rule on the books, and it's another thing to vigorously enforce it. And that's where the big knock against the SEC is coming in. You know, the SEC will go after small companies, but they'll never go after the big boys, you know, the Goldman Sachs or the JP Morgans of the world. Why is that? Because, you know, an executive of JP Morgan will go over and take a position with the SEC, or the SEC, you know, the SEC has some big player, and then he gets recruited out of the SEC and goes to work for JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs, and it's kind of an incestuous relationship up there. So the big boys are never really going to get scrutinized that closely. They're always going to go after the little guy, or in some cases they'll blame it on the company and go after the company, and you get that kind of that good old boy cronyism going on up there. And so again, just because you have a law or policy on the books does not mean that it's vigorously enforced. I think you can understand that, right?
Right. Wow. So for the average person that says, you know, I think I might want to invest in the stock market, what should they be doing? What should they be looking at? These tiny little companies or these Fortune 500 companies? And why did I grow up, I'm going to throw it at you, two part here. Why did I grow up having to always see on the news what the NASDAQ was doing and the S&P was doing, and like when it never affected my life, why is that a staple on the news every single night of our life?
Well, it's, you know, to hear the updates on the market indexes, you know, you got the Dow Industrial Average. We talked about the Dow or the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. Sometimes they'll report the Nikkei Index over in Japan, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong, some of these others. It's kind of a general barometer. It's kind of like taking the temperature of the economics, the economic condition out there in the country. If the market is robust and it's on the upswing, that's a sign of positivity in the population, in the economics of the country, and it promotes a good attitude for entrepreneurship and business out there. Your other question about, you know, should you invest in small cap companies or the large cap companies, that's a personal decision. Plenty of people have made lots of money. You know, Peter Lynch, going back 20 some, maybe even 30 years ago, you know, he made a lot of money investing in these unknown up and coming companies, and it was always, you know, a thing of pride for him. He could find a what's called a 10 bagger, a company that he buys and he sells it out at 10 times what he purchased it for. That's very possible in these earlier stage companies. Well, come along with that is a much higher risk. So it comes down to the risk tolerance of the person. I would never tell anybody anymore. I'm not licensed anymore to give advice, you know, in investment advice or investment counsel, other than to say, you know, be very aware of your own risk tolerance and do your research. There are some exciting up-and-coming companies out there right now. I mean, you know, Intel once traded for, you know, $1 or $2 out there when it was first coming up. Then it came on to be a household name and had their chips in every single computer. Certainly, Apple didn't make a big splash when it first came out, but it could, now it's the number one company in the world. It was once an up-and-comer. And so you're going to find those type of companies. You know, watch the IPO market out there. A part of a hedge fund that I've been with for the last number of years, because after I transitioned out of the financial public relations, I went and joined a hedge fund, and we traded the IPOs of these new upcoming companies. And
what is a hedge fund? Explain that.
Well, a hedge fund is a private collection of money and investors, where as opposed to a mutual fund. A mutual fund is an investment company that's also publicly traded, and a mutual fund buys the stocks of other companies. It's a company that buys other companies. It's a company that designed purely for investment, and it buys the stock in other companies. So there's a gazillion kind of mutual funds. There's almost more mutual funds than there actually are individual companies that are listed out there. So mutual funds are investment companies. Well, hedge funds are also investment companies, but they're not publicly traded. They're not listed. Typically, they're more aggressive. Oftentimes, they're perceived as being more savvy and more nimble than what a mutual fund can be. But to get into a hedge fund, you have to be what's called an accredited investor, which means you have to have a certain high amount of liquid cash and a certain net worth. You know, you have to be a millionaire to be accredited investor, and then you can get in on these companies early stage. But you have to have the right relationships. Robert Kiyosaki talks about this in series of his books, starting off with Rich Dad Poor Dad. He gets into how to invest in these earlier stage companies. So I know you're a fan of Robert Kiyosaki and his stuff.
Yeah.
And he has some good stuff on how to invest as an accredited investor as well. So I would check out that stuff. But a hedge fund is a private investment firm, open, that's typically considered maybe a little more elite, a little more nimble, and a little more back in the shadows, and they kind of get a rap of sort of being the pirates of the industry, which in many cases is kind of true. So, but then there are other companies who are just doing straight up legitimate investing, and you kind of have to know somebody to get in there. You can Google hedge funds, but doesn't mean they're going to accept you. You kind of have to know somebody. So it's more of an elite country club. I would put it that way.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah. That's a fascinating look into the world of it. So. The world of Wall Street, and you are a wealth of knowledge on this topic. I kind of want to switch subjects. Was that you, Paul, that joined us just a moment ago? All right. Well, Paul, if you're on, just say hello, because it sounds like you came on the board, or somebody did. So I want to, unless you had anything else to say on that, I mean, I feel pretty comfortable with it. You know, if somebody wants to actually buy something that's like these smaller stocks, what is the direction where you can guide them to go look at it and kind of do their own investigation on them? Is there a website to see new companies,
well,
or how do they find them?
Wow, that's kind of the problem, Randy, is that there's so much. If you go out to kind of to just Google, you know, small cap stocks or Google early stage stocks, there's so much stuff out there, and that can kind of become its own, kind of cesspool of fraud as well, because there's also people called illegal promoters that will do the pump and dump stock fraud. That's also very prevalent out there. So it is shark infested waters, but if you learn how to swim with the sharks, you can find some really good deals out there. For people that do want to get in on early stage deals, I would look at the crowdfunding sites because there are some exciting things going on now with the new Jobs Act that is recently enacted, well, the last couple of years. It opened up beyond accredited investors where the everyday type of investor, maybe they're not the millionaire, but they do want to get in the early stage. And so they opened up the crowdfunding angle, and that used to be illegal. Now it's allowed under certain regulations, Regulation CF, which stands for crowdfunding. So I would Google crowdfunding sites and go look at some of the deals that are being offered up there. That's probably where I would start.
Okay. All right. That's good. You know, if it was easy, everyone would do it. That's the bottom line. So people have to do their research if they want to get into it. I remember back in my 20s, I actually dated a guy, and really a neat, neat human being. And he actually invented a few things, had them patented, and then a company picked him up. They went public with it, and overnight he was worth about $36 million. So for those people that are investors, or, you know, the crowdfunding thing is a great idea to get out there for these little guys who want to be up-and-comers with their businesses or their ideas or their opportunities. And definitely do research before you jump into it. What do you think about places to buy, like, you know, these cheaper versions as opposed to the big stock companies, Scottrade and things like that, the smaller ones? Do you like
them? There's a new one that I recently got excited about, and you know, there's some of the firms out there, but the one that I can't believe this has happened. I guess it was inevitable, but the price to buy a stock, you have to pay a transaction cost for that. It's called the trade cost. But there's a new company out there. It's called Robinhood, where literally you can open up an account, fund it. It's very similar to opening up a bank account. You put money into it, and now you can buy stocks at no charge. They literally do not have any trade costs in there. So I would encourage people to check out Robinhood. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Okay. They've got to be making money somewhere. Where are they making their money?
Well, they have a way that they have a business model where there's some advertising involved and some other angles, but I don't want to get into the specifics, but just go check out Robinhood, the no trade cost. It was inevitable that you know, it was kind of a race to zero where they're the first company and they're growing like weeds right now. Robinhood is kind of the hottest thing going out there right now for opening up new accounts. I would encourage your people to check it out.
Yeah. I'd like to make a quick comment about our hooded friends. They have a very, very subtle way to make money. Once you deposit money into an account, the Federal Deposit Insurance Company certainly allows you to lend some of that money if the debt to equity ratio is adequate. So they have the possibility to become a low-key lender. I don't think they've gone in that direction yet, but given the status of their liquidity, it may happen. So that's another neat way they can make a little money, other than the advertising.
That's okay. Right, and that kind of ties back into what I was talking about earlier. To be able to short sell a stock, it has to be borrowed. Well, borrowing comes with interest costs, and that's the legitimate way to do it. So his point is well made. They can make money if they arrange for proper lending on that. But have your people check out Robinhood. It's pretty interesting.
Very neat. Well, let's kind of switch gears since we know Paul is on, and I love current events. We've got about 20 minutes left in the show. So, you know, Paul, you and I talked a while back, and I had talked about the different investigations that were going on. We've talked about it a few times on the show about the sex trafficking and thing that's happening and how involved these politicians are in it. And there was an arrest. I'm trying to pull up the Drudge Report. There's some arrests going down in the sex trafficking with some actors and actresses. And you being where you are, and I know, Brad, you're up on these current events too. what's going on in our country today? Where are they going to be able to bring this house of cards down that they've been hiding so well, and it's got tentacles that are so far reaching?
Well, you know, if you give me 2.5 minutes, I can recite the litany of names that are going to end up in criminal
Great.
Proceedings.
Go ahead.
And, you know, Comey should be in jail as we speak. I gave you a very short litany last week. The litany here, you know, the buck always ends somewhere, and the buck ends on Obama's desk.
Wow.
So let no one tell you that the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA, and Loretta Lynch acted on their own in a rogue fashion. They were told, they were requested, they were asked by various very subtle routes that never led back to Obama, because Eric Holder did the dirty work. He was the messenger boy. And it went from Eric Holder to Loretta Lynch, and from there it spread out. The fantastic aspect of all of this is that as of 2 days ago, the Democratic National Committee has sued the Trump organization, the Trump Electoral Committee, and the whole Trump organization for collusion with the Russians and embracing Russian intervention in our political system and our electoral system through Russians, through WikiLeaks, and through the open arms of Trump. They are cutting their own throats by doing that, because Hillary Clinton held during the campaign. She ran the Democratic National Committee. She funded the fake dossier that was put together by the MI5, MI6 British spy Michael Steele. But that dossier was also contributed to by three members of the Democratic National Committee, including Sidney Blumenthal, who was involved illegally in the Benghazi thing. So they used that dossier to launch the investigation that was started by Comey. And it is so inbred and so incestuous that it's beyond belief. But right now the process has begun to go after these people, and the first one to go will probably be the assistant director of the FBI.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be Rosenstein. Yeah, they're going to go after Rosenstein on that. And I agree. I think by them initiating this lawsuit, they're not going to like the discovery that's going to come along with that, because they
precisely.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So the stuff that they're going to have to produce is going to be very damning to themselves. So yeah, that's a good point.
It may be tossed out as a bad faith lawsuit.
Ah. So are we? I mean, there's been a story, and it's really, really horrific. And I don't know if either of you are aware of it, but we've all heard of the dark web, right?
There's
something. Okay. And we, in my household, we don't dare go on that, because it's horrific, number one. But number two, I'm sure that there's a lot of things tracked. But there's a story that came out in the last week, and it said that Hillary and her former assistant, Uma Havadine, or however you say her name, were shown to be basically raping a prepubescent girl, and then they cut her severely. Is there any truth to that story, that is circulating? And if so, why have they not been arrested just for that?
Because the rule of law has been shaken to its very roots with the 8 years of Obama, and the rule of law has got to be restructured. Consider the fact that in the last 8 days, 137 MS-13s have been released from jail. And you mentioned sex trafficking. Well, sex trafficking takes place in the borders that are the most porous, and obviously Southern California.
Southern California, yeah.
And Texas. But the bulk of the sex trafficking, because of the lure of Hollywood, is Southern California. And Southern California, in essence, is the seed crystal from which all of this spreads. And it's a dreadful situation. But the children that are brought into the sex trafficking trade are not necessarily children who have crossed the border as illegal aliens. They're also runaways and homeless children who flock to Hollywood and who flock to San Francisco, because in San Francisco, thanks to the open-handedness of the failed Jesuit Governor Brown, they get $200 a month. If you're homeless and you prove it, you'll get $200 a month in San Francisco and Oakland. It's shocking. And, of course, the National Guard that had been promised, the 400 members of the National Guard that had been promised for the California border by Brown, have now been withdrawn and put on observer status. So they stand around and observe, but they don't take an active participation. It's ludicrous. Los Alamitos, which is exactly 20 minutes from where I now sit on the phone, is one of the cities that is suing the California state against the sanctuary city status. My own city, Surf City, Huntington Beach, did this a week and a half ago. Probably San Diego County, Riverside County, San Bernardino, the Southern California counties are going to opt out of becoming sanctuary cities and will, in essence, join in what you might call a state class action suit with the federal government's suit against California. Now, there's not been much mention of Oregon or Colorado or the state of Washington, and they're kind of waffling on the whole sanctuary city issue. But the sanctuary city situation fosters human sex trafficking. Because there's no rule of law.
I was going to say, Randy, to answer your specific question about this video out there, you asked, is it true? Well, there's no way that I can vouch of its truthfulness or not. I can point you to the author, Jerome Kersey, who's written several books out there. His book out right now is called Killing the Deep State. Right. I say President Trump. And so Jerome Kersey has put out several YouTube videos talking specifically about this video that you mentioned, Randy. And he's convinced that it's true. So if Jerome the New York Times bestseller has any credibility, he's talking about it extensively. So if people want to go on YouTube for Jerome Kersey and he talks about that, there's a couple videos where he's talking about that. And it's even more horrific than what you've described.
I cut out so many details, people would absolutely want to vomit. It's so nauseating to know. It's horrific. It brought me to my knees, literally, to know what they did to that girl. And the thing is that's only one girl that they did it to. And she's dead today.
It was MS-13. There are 33,000 members of MS-13 at last count in the United States. Those numbers are weak. My guess is it's probably closer to 50,000, which means 1,000 MS-13s per state if we do it on an average basis. And then that is terrifying. It really is terrifying. And next week, even though ICE has not been notified, Governor Brown is releasing another 472 severe, serious, hardened criminals from California jails. But ICE is not being told the exact time and the date and the number and the locations from which they're going to be released. I mean,
who can step in and put a stop to that?
The only people that can do anything, constitution, These are severe violations of the U.S. Constitution, which I had to study because I'm a naturalized citizen. The Supreme Court needs to get involved. The Department of Justice has to get involved in a very, very serious fashion to enforce the strength of the lawsuit against California, but not just California. Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia are also going to be releasing criminals over the next roughly 6 weeks. So, you know, welcome into the door into summer. So it's
going to end up... It's going to end up being a constitutional issue because those lawsuits are being brought under the Supremacy Clause, and it's going to
precisely.
Be...
Precisely. The Supremacy Clause is... right. Yeah. That's
the pivotal
clause.
Explain that for the listeners. The Supremacy Clause. Go ahead. Either one of you. Paul, go ahead. Explain it.
I'm losing the connection.
Yes.
Okay,
explain
I'm back.
The Supremacy Clause for the listeners.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the meaning is in the title that the federal government can enact certain laws that are just that, laws for all 50 states. And while we like to pound the table for states' rights, in certain areas, the supremacy of the federal government is going to override the interests of the state and will carry the day on any sort of policy or law, or hopefully, in this case, lead to law enforcement as well. So
that's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Right.
So that's right. That's the only saving grace.
We'll have to enforce that.
I had considered moving to the West Coast. Very, you know, I entertain that idea continually. And every time I hear this about what's going on with Governor Brown and the state of California and even these upper eastern states, it's like, it's who would move there? I would think everybody would be leaving.
The tax situation in California is out of control. It is beyond belief. It is worse than New York and New Jersey. The real estate taxes, when you add to the real estate taxes the taxes on gasoline, I'm literally 5 minutes from major refineries. The cost of gas in California outside that refinery is 62%.
Wow, that's crazy.
And I just had a fourfold increase in one of my little residences. So,
you know, the people absolutely have to stand, and I'm sure you've thought about this. You know, Aristotle, there's a quote out there that says, tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society. The people have to stand up to this and scream from the rooftops. Is there anything that you can recommend for the people? You know, I'm not there. What can I do?
It's very, very, very complicated. And without being an alarmist or a doomsday prophet, we should all know that we are teetering on the brink of national anarchy and chaos if something doesn't happen. And California is... Chicago as a city it really lines up as number two. Mm-hmm. And you know, it goes from there, but you know, we're teetering on the brink of anarchy because the rule of law has disappeared. It doesn't exist. The Democrats are basically thumbing their noses at the American people and the American voters and you know, the House and the Senate. It's unbelievable. And my problem is I have to sign off and get on a telecon when this conversation is really getting warmer. But I hope that, you know, we're able to continue the dialogue next week. I'll have hopefully news off the presses. Do not forget that tomorrow we have a meeting with Emmanuel.
The meeting is with who tomorrow?
Well, he's the titular head of the European Union, okay?
Okay.
Let's say the de facto head of the European Union. And I believe that after our telecon, he's going to be interviewed. I don't know if it's by Chris Wallace. I'm not sure. It might be Chris Wallace. But you must catch that. You must catch that. Okay? So.
And that is today?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Very good.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Anything else you want to say, Paul, before you take off?
Just the fact that, you know, I love all of you, and I'm so privileged to be part of the group.
Well, we're so glad to have you here. You always contribute such great stuff. And, you know, just stay strong, because you're out there and you're in the thick of it, and we're just so proud of you. So safe travels to Paul. You know, Brad, you know, what's your take on, is Trump going to be able to, you know, in the Bible, let's go back to the Bible. In the Bible, whether you believe in it or not, it's definitely a good instruction manual in many ways. When they would go in, they would burn down a city and just get rid of all the evil, the filth, the wickedness, and there was no one to be spared in that. I mean, we have a sector of this society, George Soros and beyond, funded to destroy our nation. And look, I don't love every single thing about Donald Trump. You know, there is no perfect human being. But I feel like he is against, you know, talk about a mountain and moving a mountain. He's in that spot right now. And there's so many of us across this country that are in his camp and just rooting him on and, you know, standing strong even through some of these things that are coming out that are ugly. You know, if he did cheat on his wife when she was 4 months pregnant, he's an animal. I mean, there is nothing worse. But who's a worse animal? Hillary Clinton. If that was true, that what her and her assistant did to that young girl and to thousands of others, I mean, they cut her face off, according to that news story. And it was horrific. Where, you know, where is this going to go? You know, Brad, weigh in on this. What's your thoughts on Trump and how he is going to be able to handle this and all of these people that need to be arrested?
Well, he's absolutely the point of the spear, all right. And I don't know. I think it's a tall order to say that all of our leaders have to be morally perfect. And there's plenty of blame to go around on both sides, and I'm all for rooting it out. But let's face it, he's not one of the insiders. He's not one of the globalist elites out there. And he's playing for the good guys, for the right cause out there, Randy. And so, yeah, we've got to support him. We've got to support what he's doing. You know, I mentioned it earlier, that book, by Jerome Kersey, going after killing the deep state. That's what has to go on. And, we've got to support what he's doing, let everything kind of run its course. But I think so much more, Randy, is going to be coming out to the surface out there. All right, I'll hand it back to you.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to us. Please follow thebodycan.com. Join our group, facebook.com/groups/thebodycan. We have lots of great things going on. Don't forget to go to Waking Up in America. You'll hear the replay in the middle of the week if you want to come back. Thank you for joining us. Everyone, go have a super weekend. Stand tall. Walk proud. Do the right thing. Don't join in to any of this ugly stuff. God bless you all, and we'll see you next weekend.
We're almost ordinary people. And you're not crazy anymore.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
This is for all you new, pouring through. Now your heart is open.